Hi, everybody. This is your good old friend JR, and I'd like to thank you for downloading the Ross Report. In all seriousness, what's the story, Great A Nation? Chris Thomas here. Hope you're having a Great A kind of day. Finished watching the 2019 Royal Rumble of Mediocrity on the WWE Network, a company that continues to be going through the motions, not much originality or thought into the product. We'll go quickly over each match. There was a tag match during the pre-show featuring Bobby Roode and Clark Gable, Chad Gable, whatever, and half of the Revival and half of some other team, who cares. I think Roode and Gable won. I wasn't really paying attention because I didn't care. You know, when I don't care about the performers, don't care about the match. Mid-Carter Rusev versus half-effort Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura gets it with the distraction finish. And here's something where you have Rusev, who is pretty much stuck in the mid-card, despite the fact that several times he's gotten very popular with the audience, and it just hasn't mattered. I guess he's viewed in a certain way, in a certain position, in a certain spot, and that's where he's going to be. Going to be in that United States heavyweight championship position, and really, that's all you're going to expect. And Nakamura, who looked like he was wearing a red Snuggie or, you know, some woman's pajamas from Nordstrom that he found maybe in the clearance aisle. I don't know what was happening there. You know, Nakamura, big fan of his in New Japan, but he really has not done much. That was very memorable. I'm not actually sure you can even blame the company. With that, in the reason is that it seems like he's just kind of taking it easy and taking a check. You know, it's a lot less of a brutal style compared to New Japan in terms of the work rate and the wrestling style. So that's what he's chosen, you know, kind of coast. And hey, if that's how he wants to have his WWE career span out, play out, so be it. Next up was Kalisto versus Akira. And Man Boobs Atami, who looked totally out of shape. And Buddy Murphy, who does not look like 205 pounds. Not a part of 205 Live, but apparently is. He looks twice the size of everyone else he's competing with. Kalisto had a piñata, and he was throwing out tortillas to the audience. I wasn't sure what to make of that. Buddy Murphy wins, and he gets to keep the 205 Live Championship, which looks like something you can win if you turn in 1,000 tickets at Chuck E. Cheese. Next up, we had Asuka versus the trans. I'm sorry, I mean the man, Becky Lynch. Asuka won the match via the tap out, and it was kind of a weird match. I was a bit distracted by Asuka and her Jesus and the Technicolor Dreamcoat ring attire. And also that, you know, there are several shots of Asuka's cleavage. And it was a bit distressing that, you know, Hideo Itami's man boobs were much more luscious and supple than Asuka's. And, yeah, I mean, didn't quite know what to make of that. Then we have The Miz, who is about as subtle as a stroke. And Shane McMahon versus Caesar Salad Cesaro and Mohawk Boy Sheamus. And to the surprise of probably zero people, Shane McMahon wins over a full-time performer and is now half of the SmackDown, or is it Raw? It doesn't really matter. Tag Team Champions. And it's just something where I'm not really sure where the company thinks there is this demand to see Shane McMahon perform, much less succeed and get victories over the talent. I do think there was a sizable amount of support amongst people to have Shane McMahon be a part of the product, but I think it's almost suffocating at this point, and it is something where it feels like he's overstayed his welcome. Perhaps maybe just stick with a backstage role, not necessarily be on camera. That's the thing with the McMahons, is that, you know, they eat up the TV, you know, a lot of the attention goes to them, and it really doesn't focus on the talent. And really, with the tag team championships, what do they mean? What do they mean when a family member of the owner of the company is one of the title holders when they're not a full-time performer, and they're technically, when you really think about it, not a actual sports entertainer, pro wrestler, whatever you want to call it. So it's just another instance of the company not knowing what it's doing. Next up, we had Sasha Banks in a purple wig versus Ronald McDonald. I mean, Ronda Rousey. I'm sorry. And Ronda won after just planning Slasha Medvedenko, the former basketball player. Just planning Sasha down on the canvas, and Sasha's purple wig flew off her head, or at least that's how I wished it happened. So Ronda came out with the victory. Not really a surprise there. Ronda looked like El Gigante, or what was his name? Kurgan, and looked like Andre the Giant, you know, when standing in proximity to Sasha Banks. But, I mean, for the most part, the psychology of the match was fairly logical, but it was nothing particularly special. And then in the Women's Royal Rumble match, now, to be honest, I took a break. I savored some honey roasted peanuts. Planters, by the way. You know, you can't beat Planters peanuts. Planters is not a sponsor. I would certainly hope they would consider sponsoring the Great A Nation. And I'm going to go to bed tonight saying a little prayer that Planters does. Toss a couple bucks over to the Great A Nation in a sponsorship arrangement. But I was distracted by my honey roasted peanuts, and it turns out that Nia Jax, Charlotte, and the man, Becky Lynch, were the final three. Becky wins and points to the WrestleMania sign like a fool. I don't know what that is about. We get it. The person that wins the Royal Rumble match goes to WrestleMania. You don't have to point every single freaking time that you win the Royal Rumble or that WrestleMania is coming up. We get it. We get it. WrestleMania is coming up. You don't have to point like a, you know, total fool. It seems like the company thinks, and the product is, you know, heavily geared towards kids, but when you look at the actual ratings analytics, the average age of the viewer is much, much older. So it's kind of insulting to the intelligence of those actually watching the product. Then you had the soccer mom AJ Styles squaring off against the hippie millennial Daniel Bryan character. And this match was not as compelling as the match from the prior month. It really did have some interesting moments in terms of exchanges and counters, but it really didn't have that trajectory, that beginning, middle, and end that just flowed really nicely like you had in the other match. One of the Wyatt family flameouts interfered in the match on behalf of Daniel Bryan, costing soccer mom AJ Styles the win. So the question becomes, is this a feud that's going to continue? At this point, you know, how much further can it go? I think this storyline was hurt by the involvement. And again, you know, once you get a McMahon involved, it's death. It's death. You know, everyone says that, you know, when you get the McMahon family involved, that the talent gets the rub a little bit and is made to feel a little bit more important. I don't think so. Having Vince McMahon in the storyline throw a monkey wrench into the story. Now I'm not really sure what to make of the interactions between Daniel Bryan, soccer mom AJ, and the Mr. McMahon character. And I don't really see a future in terms of the storyline, but it looks like it's going to continue with some of the Wyatt family rejects. Next up, we had the used tampon Universal Championship. I'm sorry, it just looks like a used sanitary napkin. It looks like the Blood Wolf Red Moon or Wolfenstein 3D Moon from a few weeks back. And we had non-blackface demon Finn Balor. I know a lot of people were disappointed to not see Finn Balor in the demon makeup, but I think you have to realize that, you know, there's a lot of black paint involved, and given that we're in the politically correct era that we're in, Finn Balor looks like he's in blackface when he has the demon makeup on. So Brock Lesnar took a lot of punishment in the midsection, tried to make it seem somewhat plausible that non-blackface demon Finn Balor could actually get the victory. But ultimately, Finn Balor tapped out. And it was an adequate match. It was what it was. You know, you're only going to get so much out of Brock Lesnar, depending on what his mood is. And, you know, you got a fairly decent match, but is it anything approaching a match of the year candidate? Definitely not. Next up, we had the actual Royal Rumble match. And it was pretty cool that Elias interacted with Double J, Jeff Jarrett. I think that was something that had to happen at some point. I was surprised that it happened at the Royal Rumble. But it was neat to see Double J, and that he got a pretty good reaction from the live crowd, who for the most part was pretty dreadful. I've heard golf crowds and crowds at funerals that were more lively than this audience. And I can't really blame them too much because the product is not very good. So, I mean, it's something where you can't put the blame on the audience when they're being fed a product that is not something that you can really sink your teeth into. Then we saw the return of Nakamura with his Nordstrom Rack red women's pajamas at number 3 after Elias eliminated Jeff Jarrett. It was unfortunate because Kurt Angle was entrant number 4, and it would have been a nice way to have a Kurt Angle versus Jeff Jarrett with Karen Angle on a pole stipulation integrated within the Royal Rumble match, having each trying to impress Karen. I thought that would have been nice. There are a lot of folks who, you know, I'm glad they are in the Rumble, that they get some TV time, but really, are they going to win? I mean, in all reality, they weren't, so it kind of feels like a wasted spot. And it's a lot different from the Royal Rumbles growing up, where it seemed like at least over half of the participants actually had a shot at winning, even though in reality they didn't. It just seemed like the talent meant more. And this is a situation where the overwhelming majority of the talent don't really mean very much. I'm not attacking them. They're not bad people. It's just that, you know, in terms of the way they're packaged and the way they behave on camera, they don't really seem special. You know, are you going to compare Jinder Taj Mahal to Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase, Mr. Perfect, or Earthquake? I mean, come on, it's night and day. You think Johnny Gargano compares to Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart? Give me a break. So you had a lot of folks that were inconsequential. Titus, Curt Hawkins, Mustafa Ali, No Way Jose, Pete Dunne, Apollo Crews, Aleister Black. You know, some of these folks might be popular with the internet wrestling community, but are these people individuals that you can envision being a household name? And you're obviously going to say no, and you're going to be fine with that. And if you are, you're fine with the WWE being a niche product. Now, I had made a joke that Nia Jax was going to win the men's Royal Rumble and maybe, you know, one of the members of the creative team was having a mind meld communication with me, telepathic, or was just on some hallucinogenic mushrooms and came up with the idea of having Nia Jax participate in the men's Royal Rumble. So Nia Jax was participant number 30 and actually got some interesting offense in. And she took a pretty decent beating, or, you know, a choreographed beating. Took a super kick, a 619 kick off the second rope, and then an RKO from Randy Orton. And given that the product is TVPG, to see men striking a woman, I mean, I'm assuming Nia Jax is a woman and is not transitioning or anything like that. She did have a juicy bulge in a certain area, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. It's somewhat surprising because you would think that violence against women would be something that would be a big no-no. But I mean, if this is the company's idea of doing things out of the box, it's not out of the box. This is something that you've seen off and on in wrestling for quite a long time. I mean, I can think of, you know, years when Jeff Jarrett was having matches with China and was putting Mae Young and Fabulous Moolah in figure four leg locks, or Disco Inferno and WCW having matches with Jacqueline. It just didn't seem like it was anything new. Perhaps to the younger members of the audience, it felt new, but it just felt tired. And, you know, when all was said and done, Seth, Zero Charisma Rollins, with that nasally voice of his,
"Hi, this is Seth Rollins, burn it down. I'm from Iowa, have I mentioned that? I'm going to open a coffee shop in Iowa. I talk like this. And I want to be the top guy in the WWE. Just watch."
You know, Seth Rollins wins the Royal Rumble. I mean, this is about as exciting as, I can't even think of an analogy of something that's less exciting. Seth Rollins held the title for a significant period of time, and the ratings didn't move a lick. And perhaps, you know, the company's on autopilot. They don't care. You know, have Seth Rollins square off against Brock Lesnar, and maybe have him win, who knows. Have him be the guy for a little bit. It's not going to make a difference one way or the other. It's shocking to me that, you know, a lot of these performers, they don't feel like stars. I actually said to the folks I was watching the show with, "Can you hit me with a pan or a baking sheet so I can actually see some stars? Because I don't see any stars on this TV right here." So, I mean, that might be a tough assessment of the talent, but it's partially the product and it's partially the performer. You have to put some responsibility on the performer. It's always easy to pass the buck to someone else and say, "Oh, it's creative, it's creative." If the performer isn't bringing anything to the table, of course, creative is just going to position them in such a way where they're not going to feel like a star, because if they're not really a star, you know, you can't polish a turd. Can't polish a turd, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this podcast understand that concept. I kid, this is a great podcast. And speaking of that, if you can, please give a review to Great A Nation on the platform in which you use and consume podcasts. Give it a 5-star rating and a nice review, and I'll shower you with kisses. Okay, I won't shower you with kisses, but I'll appreciate it. And let me know what you think about the Royal Rumble of 2019. And let me know how many times you would like to see performers point at the WrestleMania sign when they win a match. At Grade A Radio on Twitter. That is one word. At meaning ampersand. Grade, did I say Grade A Radio? Holy cow. Apologies. The Twitter handle is at Grade A USA. one word. I guess I must have been using the same mushrooms as the person who thought that putting Nia Jax in the Royal Rumble match was going to be compelling. At Grade A USA on Twitter, and give us a nice review on the Grade A Nation podcast on the platform where you find podcasts. That's a quick and dirty review of the 2019 Royal Rumble. We could go a little bit longer, but I mean, honestly, it was a insignificant pay-per-view or live event, whatever you want to call it. And if this is how we're starting the path to WrestleMania, I am not optimistic about where we are going. Looks like I'm going to have to buy some stock in A&W Root Beer Wrestling. I mean, AEW, my apologies. Alrighty, folks. Take care. Brush your hair. We'll see you next time on the Grade A Nation.